You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. Thanks for joining us. The JX starts today with the debrief, where JPR reporters discuss the stories they've been covering this week, including an unfair labor complaint against Klamath Community College, why Shasta County's elections office is getting national attention, and why another town has ended its flock contract. I'm Maria Carter, JPR's news director.
I'm Roman Battaglia, science, environment, and politics reporter.
I'm Peyton Gast, JPR Snowden intern.
I'm Jane Vaughn, housing, homelessness, and education reporter.
And I'm Justin Higginbottom, public health and safety reporter.
Okay, Justin, let's start with you. You reported on another local government in Oregon rethinking its flock camera contract. What's the latest there?
Yeah, so this time it's the city of Winston that has ended their flock contract, and that's the first city in Douglas County to do so. And as a reminder, you know, we've covered this issue a lot, but Flock is an automated license plate reading company, and their cameras are set up mostly on the sides of roads, but also within police vehicles. These cameras record images of passing vehicles, and not only license plate numbers like the name of the technology suggests, but also it can record images of make and model and color vehicle. And this can be really useful data for police departments when they're looking for a suspect. Flock has contracts with thousands of departments in the country. The company is valued at over $8 billion. But the technology has faced a lot of pushback over privacy concerns and possible abuse. There's been cases around the country where officers have used the cameras to spy on those not suspected of a crime, like, for example, on their exes or their partners. There's also been a concern that the data could be accessed by federal immigration authorities, and that could violate Oregon's sanctuary status, which directs police to not assist in immigration enforcement in most cases.
And so Winston ended their flock contract because of these concerns?
Kind of. So the police chief talked about how residents really don't like the cameras. He recognized that. But the real deciding factor was cost in ending this contract. The Winston Police Department had to cut over $200,000 from their budget. And ending the flock contract, the city has eight cameras, saved them around $20,000. The rest of those cuts came from a lieutenant retiring. He did say that the cameras were beneficial for his department. They were able to solve a lot of crimes because of those cameras, including, he said, a homicide case. And I've seen this elsewhere. Police departments usually like Flock. They can especially help understaffed departments, which rural Southern Oregon has a lot of. But when looking for things to cut, the police chief basically said that this is what residents would choose. They don't like it, so he ended that contract this week.
And have other cities or counties in our region ended their Flock contracts as well?
Yeah, a lot of departments are reevaluating their flock contracts, usually because of pushback over privacy concerns. So most recently, there was a story that Roman reported on where Josephine County ended their contract for 10 cameras. And the sheriff there said the decision was made after vandalism of the cameras, which is something else we're seeing around the country. Even I saw there's a DeFlock America event that's kind of spreading on Facebook where people are being encouraged to disable flock cameras on Halloween night.
Yeah, I think Morning Edition just had a story about this.
Yeah, yeah. So people are concerned. And also recently in Ashland, there was some slight uproar when someone reported there was a flock camera here. It was put on this crowdsourced map, this website, and that ended up being a mistake. There are no fixed flock cameras in Ashland, but it shows that people are really concerned over where these cameras are. Although I will note that police vehicles can use the technology. And for example, with Ashland Police Department, they have flock cameras within their vehicles that can, take images or record images from passing cars if they're looking for a stolen vehicle or something like that. But we have no fixed cameras here.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Justin. And Jane, you wrote a story this week about a hearing with the Oregon Employment Relations Board over an unfair labor practice complaint. How does that all work?
So that unfair labor practice complaint was filed by a union at Klamath Community College. It's their Association of Classified Employees, which represents support and administrative workers like library and bookstore employees. And so that complaint was filed back in January. And the Employment Relations Board, or ERB, resolves labor problems, looks into union matters. They mostly look at public employers and employees, labor organizations, things like that. And so once that complaint is filed, the ERB does an administrative investigation, and in this case, they decided to hold a two-day hearing, which happened earlier this week. And so basically, both sides give testimony to an administrative law judge, call witnesses, there are documents that you present, and that judge will then make a decision on this complaint in this case.
So what are both sides arguing here?
So the union is saying that KCC has refused to bargain in good faith, that the college cut employees' hours because of union activity, and that the college failed to collect union dues from employees' paychecks. It's interesting because the union has already filed a different unfair labor practice complaint against the college last year, and that one was settled in September, almost a year ago. So the union is now arguing the college is violating that settlement agreement, but the college is saying the union is dragging up past matters that have already been settled in that settlement agreement. So in the hearing this week, KCC's attorney objected to a lot of the documents that the union's attorney introduced, saying that they were outside the scope of the current complaint. They're relitigating something that has already been settled, basically. And then KCC in general also denies the union's claims. They say there's no evidence to support those claims. There was no bad intent toward the union. And they say that the college worked hard to bargain in good faith with the union.
Okay, Jane, so what happens next?
Well, on the one hand, the negotiating is still continuing. This union is fairly new. They formed in 2024, and so they're still working to negotiate that first contract with the college. It's apparently now in mediation, and so they've apparently reached tentative agreements on a number of points, so that bargaining is all continuing. And then on the other hand, they're waiting for a ruling from the judge now. Both sides have until October 16th to submit their final arguments, and then the administrative law judge will make his ruling, which could take months. It's interesting, though, because that decision isn't final. It's what's called a recommended order. And so after that recommended order is released, both parties then have time to file objections. And then the actual board itself, the Oregon Employment Relations Board, is the one who issues a final order in the case. So there's a lot of steps still ahead. Right now, we're still in the preliminary stage of waiting for that first recommended order ruling from the judge.
And I'm sure this is something we'll be keeping an eye on.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Jane. Roman, you've been following some developments in Shasta County this week that have been getting national attention. Can you tell us what exactly is going on there?
Yeah, we've been having a lot of drama at the elections department this week, and this isn't the first time that Shasta County has gotten national attention, but here, the current elections official, Clint Curtis, had said earlier this week that he was considering hiring this prominent election denier called Tina Peters. She was convicted and sent to prison for election interference a few years ago, but now she's free, and he says he wants to replace his assistant county clerk with Peters, although apparently, according to reports, his assistant didn't even know about this plan until he saw it in the news. So, you know, I've been following the story all week, trying to reach out to people and keep up with the latest developments.
Okay, well, Tina Peters might be a new name for many people. Can you tell us a little bit more about her?
Yeah, so she is the former county clerk for Mesa County in Colorado. She was first elected to that position back in 2018, and she had actually faced a lot of controversy during the most of her time in office. In 2020, her office had admitted to finding over 500 ballots from the 2019 election that were left uncounted in a ballot box. Voters had attempted to recall her, but they didn't get enough signatures to put it on the ballot. And then she also had faced some lawsuits and fines over failures to report campaign contributions. But she's most famous, like I mentioned, for her criminal conviction around election interference after the 2020 election. So she had allowed this election denial activist access to the county's voting machines to copy information from them to try and prove that the 2020 election was stolen from Donald Trump. So eventually she was arrested and convicted of 7 charges, including 4 felonies related to those actions. She was sentenced to 9 years in prison. But earlier this year, the Colorado governor commuted her sentence and released her on parole because of pressure from the Trump administration. So currently she's serving around her remaining 4 years on parole. And since her release, she's become a really big star in the election denial circuit. She shows up at all sorts of events. She's met the president, and you know, she still says she believes the 2020 election was stolen and wants to prove it.
And so why does Clint Curtis want to hire Peterson?
Yeah, well, I mean, the two of them share a lot of similar ideals around the election system. As we know, Curtis, you know, was appointed by county supervisors last year with no experience in actually running elections at all. But, you know, he's had this vision of, you know, not trusting electronic voting machines, wanting to get rid of all of them, you know, that sort of stuff. And Shasta County, as we know, has had a lot of divisiveness around its election system. The right-wing county board of supervisors have attempted to get rid of their voting machines and hand count elections. They've been doing all sorts of things related to this movement. So, you know, Clint Curtis has wanted to reform the system, but he's obviously faced some complaints himself. He was actually censured last week, as I mentioned before, for making violent threats towards staff. And he lost his election in the June primary to the former assistant county clerk, Joanna Francisca. So he's going to be leaving in January, but, you know, he still wants to hire Peters, I guess, for the rest of this year, because he says she has experience in elections and says she cares if they are fair. He claims that, you know, the election staff have been sabotaging his efforts to reform the system and has claimed there have been irregularities, but hasn't necessarily proved them. So I think, you know, he potentially wants to hire her to help her prove that fraud.
And what have the reactions to this job offer been?
Yeah, we've been hearing from a lot of different people. I mean, first from Peters herself, we've reached out to her lawyer, who had said that she's considering the offer, but, you know, it's not definitive yet. So she may not even take up the job. It's not like a done deal. We've also seen a lot of pushback from the county and the state level. I talked to the county supervisor, Matt Plummer, this week, who had a lot of concerns about her criminal record. He said a lot of people have been reaching out to him, you know, with concerns about this announcement from Curtis. He says that hiring Peters would just increase this political divide in Shasta County. And depending on how he hires Peters, he might have to get approval from the Board of Supervisors. Curtis has mentioned wanting to hire her as a consultant as a way to protect her, but hiring her as a consultant could possibly mean he needs approval from the Board of Supervisors to do that. And from what we've seen so far from supervisors who've spoken, he's not likely to get their support. The governor has also said that his office is looking into this. And we also got a letter from California Senators Adam Schiff and Alex Padilla. They sent one to the California Secretary of State. They said they...
We seem to have lost Roman there. He was joining us by Zoom, but we'll have more of that follow-up, I'm sure, in the coming weeks. Peyton, you covered a pollinator garden opening in Phoenix this week. Can you tell us a little more about that?
Yeah, kind of a 180 switch up from Roman's story, but yeah, let's end on a high note. I headed over to the Phoenix Library this week to watch a ribbon cutting for their new pollinator garden. It's a really pretty 4,000 square foot garden that kind of wraps around the building, and there's more greenery in the front, and then there's like colorful flowers in the back. And the leadership said that they wanted to give pollinators like bees and butterflies a place to visit when they head over in the summertime. But the space is also really for the community to come to and relax in. There's really walkable paths around the garden that weave through so people can have a look at all the different plants. And there's also benches and big trees for shade. And the idea for the garden actually came up after the really devastating 2020 Alameda fire when the library hosted listening sessions to find out what the community wanted from the library, which, you know, wasn't harmed by the fire at the time. So people suggested a pollinator garden to help reinvigorate, and they said breathe life back into the community.
And can you tell us who attended the event?
Yeah, so it was around, I estimated around 40 to 50 people at the event, and a lot of them were donors and those involved in the Jackson County Libraries who played a part in the project. Ginny Auer is the executive director of Jackson County Library Foundation, and a big part of her speech was commending the helpers in the community, the people who volunteered to donate some money to help volunteer. And it was just a lot of local support from, you know, Rogue Valley businesses who made this possible. So yeah, the garden is for the community built by the community, and it's now open for them to enjoy.
And people can just go there and enjoy it for free.
Yes.
From wherever.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Peyton. I'd also like to thank Justin, Jane, and Roman, who helped bring us all the stories this week. That's it for the debrief, and thank you for listening. You can reach the newsroom with comments on our coverage and suggestions for things we should cover in the future through our news tip line. That's on our website at ijpr.org. And you can find this program and more at jeffexchange.org or on your favorite podcast platform.